Welcome to Process Breakdown, where we get proven and successful entrepreneurs to reveal step by step what's currently working behind the scenes in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and take notes as you discover how today's guest has been able to systematize their entire business so that it runs successfully without their constant involvement, like a well-oiled machine on overdrive. And here is your host.
Hi, my name is Owen McGavin-Owl, and welcome to episode 95 of the Process Breakdown Podcast. Do you want to grow your business, and is it a priority for you? In this interview, my guest reveals how we went from two founding owner operators, basically two founders, to generating over $15 million in annual revenue and employing over 100 employees. He also shares how he was able to engineer himself out of his business so that it could actually run successfully without him. And now, let's get started with the interview. My guest today is David Cicirelli. He's the founder and chief executive officer at Voices.com. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Owen. It's great to be here. I'm glad we're connecting once again.
Awesome. So this show is all about, for the listener, you know, we bring on guests like yourself who have been able to systematize their business so that it runs predictably without you having to be there. And so we want to learn from how you were able to do that. But before we do that, we want to give the listeners something that will give them the reason to stay all the way to the end. So what are some mind-blowing results that you now experience as a result of going through that process of systematizing and automating your business?
Sure. Well, I think the mind-blowing result is that we've grown from being that kind of owner-operator that was really just kind of the two of us, the two founders, my wife, Stephanie, and myself, to leading ultimately and growing our marketplace, Voices.com, to generating over $15 million in annual revenue and now employing over 100 people as well, too. So my entire mission, I had this vision at the beginning of that whole process was, how do I automate myself? And specifically, how do I engineer myself out of the business that no particular step or function relied on me?
Yeah.
So the mind-blowing result is that we've actually been able to achieve that. This has allowed us to kind of grow from, you know, as I say, kind of that founding point in the company to now where we can determine what are the best ways to operate, thinking more strategically about the company. So hopefully that gives...
That is mind-blowing. That is awesome, because I know if I heard that when I'm listening to an interview, I'm going to stay all the way to the end. So right. Now that we got that out of the way, how has your company been transformed as a result of systematizing your business?
Well, I'm going to have to kind of go back to the beginning, because maybe there's a lot of entrepreneurs that are watching and listening, wondering, well, how did you kind of go through those steps from two people to scaling to 100 and hopefully beyond?
Yeah.
You know, I guess the bottom line is that we've invested heavily in what I call great systems, really enterprise grade systems.
Okay.
In fact.
And why was that?
Well, the main one being, and then certainly, you know, there's a variety of them out there, but for us, the main one being was a customer relationship management system called Salesforce.com. Many of you probably are familiar with that. But for us, this allowed us to, in effect, get on the same platform as Fortune 500 companies, global enterprises, even though it was just the two of us.
Yeah.
So in short, we've been able to kind of punch above our weight class, kind of have that level playing field where we were operating with the same technology that some of the world's largest organizations were using.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So how has your personal life been transformed as a result of systematizing your business?
You know, I guess humorously, there's been a lot less stress because I've been able to kind of step back. I like to be strategically involved on kind of the day-to-day or operations. None of it really relies on me.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a bottleneck, I certainly don't want to be the bottleneck. So I look at that and go, how do we kind of allow more throughput, if you will? And that's throughput of any activity. It could be launching a marketing campaign. It could be handling inbound customer inquiries or processing orders, if you will. So it allows me to kind of dig into the things that I really like doing, which is plotting out the future of the company, in effect, kind of pursuing that next generation. And so if I can kind of be more, have more time to do so, allows me to take all these various data points, whether it be looking at reports and analytics, could be reviewing customer feedback and survey results, and really tying all this together, ultimately to create, a clearer vision for what that next generation of the company will be.
And you also mentioned during the pre-interview that, you know, it's not only just your personal life that has been influenced, your wife, your co-founder. Talk about that too.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Stephanie and I think have complementary skill sets, whereas myself being the more technical analytical one, mm-hmm. and Stephanie being kind of more creative, outgoing, certainly the one with all the personality,
yeah.
And a lot of energy. And so, you know, by, again, no particular process relying on her exclusively, it's given her the time to be a lot more creative. She really enjoys writing. She enjoys public speaking, being out in the community, or attending those industry conferences where she can mm-hmm. become now the brand ambassador. So it's allowed her to kind of pursue those endeavors.
That's awesome. So since you have systems in place that allows the business to run without you, and obviously Stephanie, your co-founder, I'm wondering personally, what's been the longest time you've been away from actually being at the business?
Yeah, kind of a quick story comes to mind. We had the opportunity to celebrate our 5-year wedding anniversary a few years back, and we planned for a 2-week vacation. But if some of you recall, there was this large volcano that went off in Iceland, actually.
Wow.
It created this huge ash cloud. And as our flight going from Toronto, Canada, over and landing in Paris, it was this evening flight. We literally flew over top of this volcano. It was the bumpiest ride ever. And when we landed, we found out that we literally flew through this volcano, and they shut down all the airports. And we thought, oh, not a big deal. You know, we're here for a couple of weeks, and the business is running. You know, we had my folks watching the kids.
Yeah.
So it was kind of pretty much straightforward and normal. We enjoyed our vacation, did all the touristy stuff. But then at the end of those 2 weeks, the airports were still closed, and they had to they schedule them for another week. This flight another week after that. So. I think it really, it gave us an extended vacation, if you will.
But you were not even planning. And
no, exactly. Yeah. Which I think kind of put a lot of these systems and processes to the test, because of unplanned events. So it wasn't like I could come back and suddenly rearrange a bunch of things to accommodate. So, to answer the question, 3 weeks, for a dedicated period of time was definitely the longest where we were away.
So here's the thing now, as the listeners, has heard, a lot about what you're actually achieving as a result of systematizing your business, but they probably want to get some context as to what the business is about. So what exactly does your company do, and what big pain or problem do you solve for your customers?
Absolutely. Well, thanks for the opportunity to share that. Voices.com is not only the brand name, but it's our destination. It's our website. And Voices.com is an online marketplace. We connect creative producers, mostly, business owners, folks who are working in marketing, with professional voice actors. And so these are the people with great voices. They also have a home recording studio, and they read scripts, whether it be a script for a radio commercial, a video, a podcast, intro or outro, phone systems, you name it. It's actually a $10+ billion market worldwide.
And a quick tangent, so the listener knows, is that the intro and outro to Process Breakdown, I actually got the person who I hired from your company, actually. Yeah.
That's awesome. Hey, thank you so much, Wade. We appreciate your business. and so that's what we do, is we help with those business owners find, search for an audition if you need to do some auditions, and then ultimately hire a professional narrator or a voice actor to read that script and then bring it to light. So the pain point, if I may, kind of that we are solving is access to talent. Sometimes you might have a certain vision for, and kind of an idea of who you're looking for that might represent your brand in your mind, but then you have to listen to a number of talents. So where else would you go to do that? Maybe traditionally, you might work through a talent agency, or maybe call up some friends and family members that might have great voices. But now, when it comes to kind of some of the more challenging characters, personas, maybe even languages or accents that you want recorded, Voices.com has 125,000 voice actors from all around the world who also speak over 100 different languages.
That's so awesome.
Really, any voice you can possibly imagine, you can likely find on Voices.com.
So you mentioned earlier that you have 100 employees. I'm also wondering, is the company profitable? What was last year's annual revenue, and what do you expect to do this year?
For sure. So last year, you know, we're in continue to be in a growth mode. I would refer to us, you know, on an EBITDA basis, kind of marginally profitable. This is the challenge I think many entrepreneurs face: is you can either be kind of reaping those rewards and kind of taking those profits.
To grow the company, especially
growing your company. And so at this point, we still feel that there's a huge opportunity out there. Mm-hmm. You know, every day is exciting, kind of coming into work and you know, working with new clients, working with new voice talent as well. And therefore, we just, you know, want to be, you know, constantly driving forward. So we do continually invest in the future growth of the company.
So last year you did what?
Yeah, last year we did kind of $7.5 million in in sales. This year we're looking to kind of, as I mentioned off the top, kind of cross that 15 million mark. We think that over the, you know, my personal goal would be 100 million by 2020. So that's in effect kind of doubling every year over the next 3.5 years or so.
That is awesome. So the thing is we realize where your business is now, but it wasn't always the way it is now in terms of from a system standpoint. So take us back to where the business was, you know, back to when the business was not systematized and automated like it is now. What was wrong with it?
Well, it was much smaller. So I think our first failure, if you will, was that we believed that we could keep a lot of this information in our head, namely the information around our customers, specifically, you know, who our customers were, names, phone numbers, email addresses, how often they called. So I think that was a big mistake that we didn't, you know, even have rudimentary spreadsheets. Yeah. In fact, it was so bad that we were just kind of making do. But we actually had this large whiteboard in the corner of our kind of dinette, which was doubled as our home office. And it was a large whiteboard that Stephanie and I literally wrote down the names of our customers. And so I think that was a big mistake that we didn't get onto a true platform. We did it as soon as we possibly could, but that was a mistake.
And you also then, go ahead, finish your thought.
Well, no, I was just going to say, yeah. I mean, on top of that, you know, because we didn't have a system or spreadsheets, if you will, we also didn't kind of document even what we were doing. It was more of the fly by the seat of your pants type approach. So our solution, you know, now is that we definitely do document our processes, and I can kind of, you know, in a bit, I'm sure I'll kind of explain our approach to doing so. But, you know, the end result is that we maintain a collection of what we call playbooks.
Yeah.
In fact, every role or position within the company, and definitely every department has one, is a playbook, which is in effect kind of an internal user guide, but it goes through, yes, the policies and procedures, the systems, the step-by-step on how to carry out particular actions. And then they serve not only as a, you know, as the internally best known practice, but they also are great training material going forward. So we maintain those certainly kind of every quarter, every 2 quarters. And absolutely, when somebody new joins the team, that sometimes is the prompting to go, oh, actually, we changed something here. That needs to be updated. And we do that in the moment. And they're all hosted in Google Docs.
And we also will get into, like, you know, how it's working right now. But I really want to share with listeners some of the low points that you guys actually experienced when the system was not when you didn't have the system the way it is right now. You mentioned something like a story during the pre-interview about having toll-free telephone numbers and stuff like that, and dreading who was going to answer the call. I don't know. What was that?
Right. Yeah, no, it's, yeah, again, kind of a funny story here. Again, so, you know, two-person operation, working out of our apartment, our condo, if you will. And we did, I guess, have a degree of foresight to realize we definitely wanted to connect with our customers.
Yeah.
And I thought the lowest cost way to do so was to actually install a toll-free phone line into our apartment, and then post that phone number at the top of every page on our website.
Yeah.
And whenever that toll-free number would get called, it was this little box that kind of sat in the corner. And it would, you know, it would click into motion, and the listener would be, you know, the caller would be listening to some initial greetings. Mm-hmm. But as the caller was going through the, you know, thank you for calling Voices, you've reached, press 1 for sales and 2 for customer service and so forth. you know, Stephanie and I would kind of give each other this panicked look. And the panicked look was, okay, which one of us is grabbing the baby and running down the hall and kind of muffling the crying in the background? Well, the other one, you know, answers in the most professional of all voices. Thank you for calling voices.com. You reached David. How can I help you? And so we would kind of have to like really wing things. And, you know, and then at the same time, keeping track of that information by documenting it using that same whiteboard. It was literally just ticks beside people's names. So that was as sophisticated as we got it in those earliest days.
And so, I'm wondering, was there a specific thing that happened that made you say, well, it's enough. I have to, you know, your breaking point, you know, you have to change things around. What happened?
Well, I definitely think that we were taking calls day and night. That was a big issue. We also found that we were kind of reinventing the wheel by answering the same questions over and over. Mm-hmm. But the real tipping point was that, you know, when we were writing all of these names down, our kind of mid-afternoon break was to head down to the local coffee shop. And actually, we were trying to memorize all of the names that we had written on this whiteboard by jotting them back on the napkins from the coffee shop. And we realized there's no possible way that we can do so. There's over 100 names that we had. And I think, you know, I've read that, you know, kind of the human mind can possibly keep, you know, up to 250 names. But that's if you kind of know people face to face. And mm-hmm. a lot of them are personal relationships or family members. But folks that we've, you know, customers that we've never met, we only knew them by a name, so we didn't have a lot of context. We felt kind of 100 was maxing out. And so that was really the tipping point, if you will, where we realized, well, look, we need a better system to do this. We cannot possibly keep it all in our heads.
Totally understand. So what was the very first name, first step you took to systematize the business?
Well, you know, how to kind of get all of that intellectual knowledge, if mm-hmm. you will, out of our minds and
out of the whiteboard.
And off the whiteboard. That's right. And into some kind of sheet. So we started with a pretty low tech, which was a big spreadsheet, and just trying to get all of the information possible that we actually knew about them. Instead of kind of resorting to these shorthands, we wanted to have complete information of all of our customers. Accurate information that, yep, this is their phone number, that we wrote it down correctly, that this is their, you know, we think that, oh, right, they're in the East Coast or West Coast. We just kind of did a big data dump, if you will. And then that actually led us to importing it into our first database.
Which is Salesforce, right? System.
Yeah.
But you
we actually did something different before Salesforce, mm-hmm. But then eventually kind of migrated in to Salesforce.
What did you do different for Salesforce? I'm wondering.
It was another CRM package called NetSuite.
Oh wow, that's enterprise.
Which is still on the market today. At the time, they were both relatively new, and we initially went with NetSuite because of they had this financial reporting package as well mm-hmm. too. And I've always been a big fan of kind of the one system that does it all.
Yeah, solving the entire problem. Yeah.
Exactly. And not having to kind of duplicate data in two different systems and which one is the system of record, these kind of questions, you know, you want to have them at least thought through initially when you select kind of your master system. And so we just found that the usability, at least at the time of NetSuite, was subpar. And therefore, even just when it was the two of us, we realized, look, we don't enjoy using this. And that might be a kind of a small takeaway as well, mm-hmm. is that you really need to enjoy using that system, whatever it is, because it is your business's brains and memory of how everything works. So we actually found, if you will, a lot more enjoyment in using Salesforce.
One of the things that you mentioned during the pre-interview that really stood out to me was that you guys before, because knowing that the tool you're going to use was, you know, enterprise and it would take a while to understand it, y'all wanted to fully understand what you were trying to port over. So you spent some time understanding all the different parts of, you know, using the spreadsheet to fully break down what you needed to push over to the CRM. Can you talk about that? Because I think that's important to share with the listener.
For sure. Well, if the first thing is this kind of like low-tech spreadsheet, mm-hmm. Really, that next step was when you get it into some system.
Yeah.
I don't think spreadsheets are going to be scalable for very long. When you get it into some system, then you next have the challenge of adoption.
Yeah.
And so we needed to kind of create some clear definitions around what is a lead, meaning kind of a prospective customer, versus an account, which is an active customer. And the contacts, the people that work at those companies.
Yeah.
So we created those definitions. We also literally whiteboarded, and if not whiteboard, writing these out on pen and paper, just in kind of flowchart style, what kind of triggers those kind of conversion moments where this relationship becomes something else? Or what is, you know, well, you have an account. You know, what are those sales deals? And Salesforce calls these opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And so what information do we need there to represent a sales deal? And so by kind of creating that system and knowing who's responsible for what, it really avoided these kind of data silos where we had this all the transaction information in one area and all customer information in another. It allowed us to kind of look almost holistically at the entire business, those kind of key moments of truth, if you will, those steps along the way,
mm-hmm.
and then ultimately customize. I don't want to say we built it from scratch because Salesforce was very good coming out of the box, if you will, but customizing the application to our needs.
Yeah, so first of all, knew exactly what you needed it to be like by using the manual way, right?
Yes.
Before being able to now take what you had manually by taking it into a tool that you can now build or customize the tool to suit that manual way that you already built with the informations that you needed. But just to make this even more concrete for the listener, I'm wondering, on that spreadsheet and the different triggers and different stages, you know, can you just talk about what was happening there so the listener can have a more concrete of understanding of it?
Sure. Let's take kind of the opportunity record. And an opportunity, again, is representative of a sales deal.
Mm-hmm.
So on that, you know, we listed what are called fields, basically the areas where you're going to enter data, and listed exactly what information we needed and what were the steps in the process. So a sales deal just doesn't come in and close. Often there's, you know, a prospecting phase, and then maybe there's a quoting phase where you're sending out a price quote, and then maybe there's a negotiation phase, and then mm-hmm. ultimately there's a closed one deal where you landed the sale. Then admittedly, there's also a closed loss. You don't win all of your deals as well too.
Of course. So
really thinking those through, even a simple sales process like that with those kind of four or five key steps allowed much more consistent information and encouraged kind of what became best practice internally. But I mean, you can do that for, and that's just on the sales deal. You can look at support cases.
Even production as well, yeah.
You know, exactly. Production, you know, your order flow, you know, really any aspect of your company is going to have, let's call it an object or a unit of work.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that unit of work will have a series of steps that it's going through. You can call it a status or you can call it a stage. But it's usually going through a series of steps.
And is it like the steps are always the same?
They are. It's for that particular unit of work.
Work, yeah.
So, and that's what allows it to be repeatable. And then you can look at other really neat things like adding automation and so forth as the company gets more sophisticated.
So I'm wondering, I get how you did the spreadsheet thing, broke out all the different steps or the different stages of the company, and was able to put that into a tool like Salesforce so that it worked the way you wanted it to work. But I'm wondering, were there any other steps that you guys took to systematize the business besides that?
You know, we always start with a low tech solution. So now, you know, even if something sounds like it's a big issue,
mm-hmm.
And this sounds awfully silly, but we even just because in the moment it sounds like, oh man, this thing's happening all the time. Like we need a process around this.
Yeah.
Well, my immediately like kind of counter argument is really, how often does that happen?
Yeah.
Let's do this. Why don't you just get a sticky note and add some check marks onto it? Do that for a week. And then let's talk. And is this, you know, how many check marks on there? Is this happening once a day, 10 times a day? Like, let's get a sense of the scale of the issue. And it's really only at that time when we have an understanding of how big of the problem is this, that we can very quickly create a business case for spending the time and energy and maybe financial resources on building out a much better system. So we usually start from like paper to spreadsheet, and then ultimately some kind of computerized version, which was going to result in a build out system. In our case, in Salesforce.
And so I'm wondering too, can you give us an example of, I like that whole concept, but can you give like an example of something specific that happened in the company that you guys had to employ that manual process first and then going to building this system for it before even automating eventually? Yep. Is there something that comes to mind?
For sure. Let's even talk about handling support cases.
Okay.
So a support case would be a customer, kind of an inbound customer inquiry by phone, by email, or filling out an online form. And so these were coming in really just, you know, ad hoc. You can't predict when your customers are going to need help.
Yeah.
We answered each of them individually. There was, you know, with kind of a on the spot created solution and answer to their common questions, like how do I reset my password? You know, what's your pricing plan? Like, you know, very typical questions. And so that was the manual, no process, no documentation.
Yeah.
We then moved to actually realize that Salesforce had this component called support cases. So we actually kind of thought, let's start in when you look at the customer lifecycle, we actually started at the end. We kind of work backwards, if you will.
Yeah.
And we wanted to serve our existing customers the best.
Yeah.
And that's where this focus on customer support cases kind of first came out. So the rule of thumb that we had, which was every customer support interaction needed to be created as a case. So now it's logged.
Yeah.
And every inbound phone call, every inbound email, every time a form was filled out on our website, it created a case in Salesforce. So it became, again, this single source of truth for all customer service inquiries. But in answering those cases, because sometimes on the spot, if you're on a call, you might need to get back to somebody because you need to research it, or it comes in by email and you realize, well, look, I've answered this 50, 60 times. Do I really want to be typing this out from scratch? So we actually created an internal knowledge base that provided answers to common questions. So these FAQs allowed us to almost, in effect, kind of have a customized intro and outro of the email, but literally pull in the kind of, you know, meat and potatoes, to use Stephanie's term, the body of the message. And so it was a standardized solution, a standardized step-by-step that we could use over and over and over.
Yeah.
Not only is it saving a ton of time in our fingers, but we were consistently giving the same correct answer.
Yeah.
It needed to be maintained only once. And that allowed us to answer customers through a variety of channels, but giving them verbally the same answer or typing it out. And that was a huge breakthrough. And then last point on that is that we actually made that knowledge base accessible and searchable on our website. So no longer did customers necessarily need to rely exclusively on us. They could actually employ a bit of, you know, customer self-service, if you will.
And that's kind of like the automation part of it now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you can, I mean, there's definitely a generation of people who would prefer, and maybe it's a bit of personality type as well, too.
Yeah, that's true. I usually prefer to just find my answer myself.
Yeah, find the answer myself, right? I don't want to wait on hold. I don't want to call in, find out it's after hours, or wait 24 hours for an email to get back to me. If the answer is on the web, I'm probably going to Google it first, then get through. If I get to a help section of a website, if it's done, with a degree of sophistication, you can absolutely, a lot of customers are going to be able to find those answers themselves.
And so I'm wondering, how exactly do you document procedures and processes for the business, and you know, what tools did you even use?
Well, I mentioned these, you know, we're a big one is these playbooks, have through Google Docs. So we are a kind of a Google Apps centric business. So if you think of kind of mentally, the separation is Salesforce manages our customer information, and then Google Apps, namely the Docs and the Drive, kind of manages like internal documentation of how we go about serving those customers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have a template for creating new playbooks, and that covers for any group. So for instance, marketing, what are the key roles in marketing? What is somebody who's responsible for partnerships? How do they differ from public relations?
Yeah.
How do they differ from, you know, content creation or search marketing? These are all different roles, and each role is going to have responsibilities.
Yeah.
Also, we'll document what are the systems that are being used. And so, I mean, marketing is of a particular challenge. Like I read in Chief Marketing Officer website, CMO.com, that the average typical CMO has to deal with over 100 different marketing systems alone. If you think of content management systems and every ad platform kind of
analytics systems,
analytics, absolutely. So you've got all of these, and this is why you need kind of that that playbook to kind of tie all this together to realize there's a time and a place to use each of these, and who owns that system, right? Who's responsible for maintaining the credit card information if it's an ad platform, or maintaining, contact information, whatever it may be, generating the reports as an example. So those playbooks have been really instrumental for us that, that, as I say, not only kind of solidify and say once and for all, this is how we use it, but as I say, it also serves double duty so that when we train somebody else in that role, that they're getting access to the same information.
So who's responsible for managing and maintaining this playbook? Because otherwise it could get stale.
Absolutely. It's the manager of that department. So in effect, the most senior person in that department. Now, when we created the marketing one as an example, where we went from probably 4 or 5 different smaller versions of it, and we just consolidated it into one, it was the director of marketing who I said, look, by the end of the quarter, you've got 3 months. I want all this consolidated, one, as I say, single point of truth. And she, in turn, asked for participation from each person. So the person responsible for content created the content section, person for public relations created that section as well, too.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it came down onto her in the performance review that I was sitting down with her to say, great, let's run through this. This is amazing. She obviously, that's part of being a manager, is that you can kind of, leverage the expertise from people on your team as well.
So at the time when you were, working on systematizing and automating business, I'm wondering what books and even mentors had influence on you and why?
Well, I mean, there's the classic E-Myth, but I think it was the E-Myth Enterprise talked more about the 7 components.
I don't even know about that book, the Enterprise one. I know the E-Myth, but I never knew there was an Enterprise.
Yeah, there's a couple different ones now, but the Enterprise one is really interesting because it just talks about kind of, I guess, scaling up and running a much bigger
company.
Organization.
Okay.
Pardon me?
No, I said running a much bigger company.
Exactly. So I really enjoyed that. But to complement that as well, too, many entrepreneurs, I think, they see everything as an opportunity.
Yeah.
A book that I enjoyed was The 80-20 Principle by Richard Koch.
I love that book.
Yeah. And just, the concept of like filtering out, those activities that really are low impact, that just kind of consume a lot of time, energy, and resources, you can probably diminish them or get rid of them entirely, and then focus on the 20% of your time and your activities on those things that are going to result in 80%, deliver 80% of the results. And that often comes through in a number of exercises that we do now. These kind of 80-20 type themed, brainstorming sessions and exercises when we're, building a system, determining what to do next. But yeah, those are two certainly instrumental books.
That's awesome. And so if we just only talk about what you did and the results, it doesn't give a full picture of what happened, because there obviously had to have been challenges. So, while you were trying to systematize the business, so what is the biggest challenge that you experienced when you initially tried to systematize your business, and how did you solve it?
Well, when you first build something, I think you have a bit of an idea, or maybe even a hope, of how you think it's going to work. If it's a system, you can engineer it a certain way. But then, once it starts getting used, you don't really know if it's working right. So I think you should create that definition of success But then the challenge really is the verification of it. And I think I sometimes admittedly slip back into this where I feel like I need to verify a particular part of the system or verify that data is correct. Mm-hmm. So building in those kind of monitoring systems on top of the like kind of core functionality, be it through reporting or reports and dashboards and some kind of analytics, I think is a good way to kind of overcome that maybe nervousness of, is it working the way it should be? And that way you can have a lot more confidence in the data that's coming out of the system. Is it working? Address any slippage that occurs, leaks, you know, if you will, exit paths, whether they're voluntary or not. And then if those anomalies do happen, it actually creates an opportunity where I can go about fixing those. And so, well, it's a challenge, this kind of need to, you know, despite building the system, like the need to kind of want to monitor it. Mm-hmm. When those anomalies do pop up, I view those as opportunities to actually refine it and make it all much better.
So viewing, issues with the system as opportunities to improve upon that system, right? But then you also mentioned verification. Had to do something specific to make sure that you're always verifying? Is this something you put into the system to make sure that happens? I'm wondering.
We have in effect like a red warning or alert system.
Okay.
A lot of it is kind of email based to trigger when something happens outside of the norm.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great example, actually, I think, is Google Analytics allows for this, where I believe they're called analytics alerts or intelligence events. And so, for instance, if the daily traffic coming from Google AdWords, you know, where the source is Google AdWords or cost per click, exceeds 5,000 visitors in a day, I will get an email. Because basically what that's telling me is that suddenly something happened where we're getting a lot more clicks and consequently paying a lot more to Google for that advertising traffic. And I want to be notified about that. On the other end, if, for instance, organic traffic suddenly dropped by 20% over the daily average, kind of over the last 7 days,
yeah,
I also want to know about that. So I think there's events that that kind of, if you can kind of build those event-based triggers that merely alert you, and yeah, you're going to have to investigate or go, okay, that's nice to know by email, but no action required. I think that's a great step in solving the need, where you don't necessarily need to log into every different system, you know, multiple times a day, build these event-based triggers, and you can again refine those over time too, that allow you to identify what those anomalies are and then quickly address them.
That's awesome. And so I'm wondering, what was the second biggest challenge that you experienced when you initially tried to, you know, systematize the business?
Yeah, I see a lot of again other entrepreneurs make this same mistake that we made, which is to jumping to automation way too quickly. It sounds very glamorous that you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get the system and it does these things in an automated fashion, but learning from experience, that kind of low tech solution first, and then kind of systematizing it, for lack of a better term, and then finally adding automation, you get to refine multiple steps along the way. I have this phrase, I say, progress is better than perfection, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you aim for perfection and this fully automated system that requires no intervention whatsoever, it sounds wonderful. But, you know, when you flick on a system like that and it is automated, things can get out of hand very quickly. Quick story, if I may. To kind of put that into context, we had this idea that we wanted to follow up with customers very quickly after they signed up with us. And which makes sense. You sign up, you create an account on voices.com. We wanted to follow up literally within the first 5 to 10 minutes of somebody signing up. There's report research from the Harvard Business Review that says if you can call somebody within the first 5 minutes, you can increase the likelihood of a sale by 400%. So we definitely want to call people as quickly as possible. And so our way of kind of going, oh yeah, let's kind of trigger when somebody signs up, we'll create a task and it'll email out a task. And then in Salesforce, it'll have this little task object that the account managers need to address. Well, when there's a couple hundred people signing up every day, and then you don't get through to everybody every day either, next thing you knew, we flicked on this automated system. We had 20,000 tasks all in this backlog.
Wow.
That kind of became meaningless, to be honest with you, because it's like, oh, it's just another, you know, couple hundred email. They just piled up. Nobody really looked at them. And you know, everyone kind of loathed these tasks because there were so many of them that we eventually just turned the whole thing off, mass deleted the tasks and go, okay, let's create another way, to do that, which became an alert once somebody, first signed up and alerts the account manager, but it doesn't create this other task unit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm glad you shared that story too.
Yeah. It just seemed like work for the sake of work, like more clicks than necessary.
Yeah.
So we realized that and then eventually kind of turned that off.
And while still on challenge, I'm wondering, were there any other challenges that you experienced when you were trying to, you know, create systems to systematize the business and stuff like that?
For sure. Well, I mean, the challenge often will come up where if you've invested in a particular business platform, if you will, that you can face challenges on integration. So I always kind of try to think of this as if it's a platform, that there should be other apps, almost like an app store or an app ecosystem or some kind of marketplace where you can build onto functionality. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those apps, those kind of add-ons don't work
exactly
in the way that you would have wanted to, or necessarily they were positioned or kind of described as such. So we've run into a few of those, but now our number one vendor selection criteria is it native to Salesforce? Meaning, does it actually work plug and play in Salesforce? Not some third party that, you know, we're going to spend months trying to jam in these two things to work together. But is it natively working in Salesforce where it is kind of plug and play? And they have an app exchange is what they call it, where you can find a lot of those applications, those business applications for, you know, everything imaginable. So that's one of the ways that we've been able to solve it, is just to be very disciplined on our, you know, app selection.
Exactly. And with all this, you know, given all the challenges that you were experiencing then, I'm wondering, why did you stay committed to the goal of systematizing your business?
Well, it's the only way that that you can scale up a company, right? I mean, if you know, the flip side, if we never took any steps to build a process, to build systems, we really would only be kind of a two-person company, and then and it would be highly labor intensive, if you will, and the only kind of unit of economics would be hiring more and more people. At some point, you want to have kind of a breakout where your growth actually becomes independent of how many employees that you have. It becomes kind of a multiplier effect. And so, I'd like to believe that we've achieved that, because two people can only possibly contact and manage so many relationships.
Yeah.
But now, with the right systems in place, with a staff of 100, we have 250,000 relationships that we're maintaining. So you need a great system behind the operations to be the main way that you're scaling up your company.
So let's take the listener to a more current time in the story. So at what point in time were you able to systematize your business and have it run successfully without you? I'm assuming this is the vacation when you tested, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that was about 5 years into the company. That was kind of the first real good test of that. Another instance was last year. I lived in New York City for much of 6 months. So I was kind of there for a month, back for a couple of weeks, and then there again for a month. Before that, I was in another technology accelerator program in Silicon Valley for 3-4 months at that point. So I mean, there's been times on and off where there have been good blocks of time that have allowed me to kind of step back and put the system to the test.
Yeah. And also, now that we're talking about more currently how the business works, I always want to give the listener kind of a behind the scenes of how, you know, your business works. So imagine someone who probably has some need for, you know, a voice professional to do some, you know, voice work for the for whatever product they have on, on one end of this conveyor belt. And then on the end of the other, this same conveyor belt is that same person. They've gone through your system and they're raving about you guys and how you guys, they love you guys and stuff like that, telling the whole world. But behind the scenes, there's this whole, you know, systems and processes and, you know, working behind the scenes to make that transformation happen. So walk us through it and even feel free to start from even how you even acquired them in the first place.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that is really the first place to a start is kind of this initial awareness piece. And so how would somebody maybe first come across voices.com is actually likely through our content. So we do have a content creation process. And so with that, that kind of starts with ideation where, you know, certain ideas for news stories or blog topics or how-tos, tips and tutorials, these kind of articles are done and managed. And that story, if you will, goes through a series of steps from, you know, editing and then ultimately to be shared, which means it's published and live and there's a URL with it. And if it's to be shared, well, then another member of the marketing team actually picks up that URL, schedules a post across various social media channels. So those are scheduled in advance. And then it gets finally tracked as, you know, shared. And so that means that this thing is totally done. But that content creation is really done because we ultimately want to get awareness in two main areas because we're an online company that comes down to search and social. And so we want to kind of tap into those, all that demand that's happening. So we've gone from content creation to demand generation. And if we can tap into the demand on search, all those people that are searching every day for things like voice actors or voice over talent, how do I produce a radio commercial? These kind of terms, we actually have to start with the content so that when people are searching for that, it, you know, bubbles up organically. Then next would be kind of, you know, if the purpose of marketing is to actually bring somebody to the website and convert that visitor into a registered user, well, once they've signed up, as I said, that becomes kind of almost like this handoff. Into sales. And the sales team, which are really account managers, they manage that relationship from that initial sign up where we're calling people right away, introducing ourselves, making it a lot more kind of a personal approach, despite it being, you know, a web company. We want to service our client and talent accounts closely. But usually, because voices.com is very much a utility in a certain way, you're there for one reason, which is to hire a talent. Those clients usually, again, have this project in mind. And so we would want a quote on that project. We have a quote calculator that takes in a number of variables. For example, what language, how many words they want to speak, how many talent that they might need to hire on that. And we walk through that that quote calculator, generate a proposal for them. And then, you know, if there's some negotiation maybe that needs to occur, mapping of the timelines, we do that. And then we ultimately close the deal. And so that's kind of the sales piece. And then lastly, and we've covered this quite a bit, was this kind of customer support system. Inevitably, after every sale, a customer, you know, might have some further questions. They can certainly go back to the account manager. But for those things that may be of more of a technical nature, that the customer support system would be there. So those are, you know, those are kind of the three big chunks, I think, of marketing, and sales, and service.
And that's good. And so you've already talked about, to an extent, part of this thing where I was about to ask you, you know, what systems you have in place to enable the employees know what they need to know. And you've talked about how you have procedures and processes like playbooks and stuff like that. But I want to highlight something you said during the pre-interview, how you have a company-wide access to all the information. Absolutely. But this dashboard, company-wide dashboard, department dashboard, and talk about those things.
Yeah, so company-wide, I mean, we're very open in terms of the access to the information, be it in Google Analytics or Salesforce, where most of us are spending our time in Salesforce. Mm-hmm. And so the way we make that information accessible, yes, is on like the specific record, you know, we're working with, you know, XYZ company, but then when there's 250,000 accounts, you actually want to get this kind of like bird's eye view of how is the entire company, you know, doing. And so I've created a series of these company-wide dashboards and then that look at like sales across the entire company, you know, marketing metrics across the entire company and all different channels and so forth. And then customer support satisfaction scores for everybody in the company. So that's kind of what's on the company-wide. Then we do drill down into some more specifics on a department basis.
Okay.
But then and you can see everything on performance on a daily, weekly, or monthly progress as well.
You also mentioned there's a personal dashboard as well. Talk about those.
Yeah, and that's where I think, you know, if we're wondering, you know, how do we ultimately know, one, is the system working, but on an individual basis, how am I contributing to the success of the company?
Yeah.
So we do really create a mechanism and requires a high degree of personal responsibility in personal success in their position. And how do we do that? The mechanism is this concept of this personal dashboard. So if we've got kind of company and department dashboards, every individual here at Voices has a personal dashboard. So they can see, let's just take sales as an example, because it's, you know, everyone can easily grasp this, especially if you worked in sales, but it outlines the exact kind of, you know, there's reports and charts, if you will, across emails, calls, number of accounts that have active, how many deals I have in the pipeline, what are my sales results for, you know, on a daily basis, monthly basis as well. So you really kind of, and it's just your own.
For your own roles.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And so also, you also mentioned, I think this is interesting too, the performance review system.
For sure. And so, you know, if an individual is responsible for their success on a day-to-day basis, we also need to kind of check in every once in a while. And so we have a performance review system called work.com. It's a module that's added into Salesforce. And in effect, what this does is it allows at the end of a 3-month period, you know, at the beginning you set goals, of course, and they could be hard goals like those tangible sales numbers, or they could be softer goals like learning a new skill. But at the end of those 3 months, you would sit down, you're given a number of surveys are sent out and you sit down to do these surveys, and it's called a 360. So maybe some people have done these before, but basically there's a self-assessment survey. There's a peer survey. So you review people that you might work closely with, not necessarily in the same position, but maybe they're in a supporting role. Mm-hmm. There's an upwards review where you review your manager, and then there's the manager's review. And you kind of go through this process kind of to document and kind of capture the stories of not only those hard results, but the impressions that
you're creating,
exactly,
you.
On how you're working together. And we do that once every 3 months. And that's kind of a great way to level set and make sure that we're all moving towards the same common goal.
And let me see if I got that peer review thing right. So it's like 360 degrees. The person is being interviewed by, being reviewed by their manager, both of them, and also being reviewed by their peer within the same department or peer across the company. I'm just
It could be peers in different departments, actually. And that's where usually we find the biggest area of improvement is because there's not quite an understanding of what somebody else might be doing in another department. So for instance, I might make the sale, but then that sale gets handed off into the finance department. And now that, you know, for the invoice to get sent out and accounts receivable, you know, we're literally waiting for the check to arrive in the mail or a wire transfer. And so by having a complete deal information, the sales opportunity, well, we can accurately create an invoice and send it out if we have the correct billing contact and address and so forth. So those are kind of those learning opportunities where we hear from the other departments and how we're working together, we can spot those areas for improvement.
And the final way the peer review is that they're actually doing a review of themselves. So I'm assuming that at the end of the day, you're just looking at all these three different reviews, the one from the manager, one from the company across the board, the other people reviewing them across the company, as well as them reviewing themselves and seeing, does this all three line up together?
Exactly. And, you know, what's funny is that most people are hardest on themselves.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you're doing a self-assessment, you know, you don't want to be, you know, gloating, and you know, there's areas that you can improve upon. And really it's just a matter of, okay, you know what, actually, you know, others are, you know, want to encourage you in this area as well too. Or yeah, you're right. This came up a couple times, not the end of the world, but let's make a point of fixing this, you know, particular activity, or, you know, let's get some mastery in this area as well too.
So I'm wondering, now that you have more free time in the business, I'm wondering which areas you focus on now and why.
Well, I guess I kind of touched on this as well too, around, you know, in the kind of monitoring and verifying that all is working. I feel like I'm kind of constantly trying to find those areas that have yet to be improved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you will, the stones,
the treasure hunt, huh?
Yeah. Treasure hunt, the stones that have kind of yet to be turned over. Usually those are, you know, they're the diamonds in the rough, that if you can find them, that this whole department sometimes suddenly becomes way more productive, or we yield better results in a particular area. We have, for instance, 200,000 leads in our system. Could be leads that some people we met at a conference. Mm-hmm. Some people have downloaded these white papers or PDF, but they have yet to become a customer. They never became a paying customer. So we're right now kind of working through, how do we reach out to those leads in the most efficient way possible? How do we kind of re-engage them and start a conversation, you know, up again, to bring somebody who might have been interested in at one point, and then generate regenerate the opportunity, a relationship, to maybe spot an opportunity. And so I like finding those kind of opportunities for improvement.
That's awesome. So what's the next stage of growth for your business, and what do you plan to achieve next and why?
Well, we've just hit, you know, kind of a real critical milestone for us, was crossing the 100 employee mark. You know, I think so. That was, you know, in and of itself, you know, a critical stage, and one that we were really working hard towards achieving. But for me personally, every year I do write a strategic plan, and it is kind of more of a living document.
Yeah,
that's maintained again, and I literally print a hard copy every year. Yeah, it's saved electronically, but I like that hard copy because it puts in stone, like, hey, here's what we committed to, and we're not changing things. But, you know, one of those key initiatives in that strategic plan was just to amplify that those things that we're already doing so well. It's not necessarily moving in to a new product segment that we have no experience in, but rather scaling up those things that are already working so well. So I think that's why it's very timely that we're speaking, because my mind is really around, you know, around our systems you know, kind of squeezing out, you know, optimal performance out of the way that we are currently doing things.
That's awesome. So as we come to the end of the interview, you know, if you want to do like a quick summary of what we just, the steps the listener has to go through to kind of transform their business so it runs without them, a quick summary, what would that be?
Well, I really like saying, you know, start with this low tech solution, kind of regardless of what system you currently have in place. This could be as straightforward as getting out some blank pieces of paper, create some timesheets, if you will, and literally write down what you're doing every day. If you're a solo entrepreneur, or maybe you have a smaller team around you, as the team leader or president or a CEO, of a growing company, I think it's important to determine what is it that you do best that kind of no one else can do. And if you find you're doing things, or your time is being utilized on other activities, well, you got to write those down, and then ultimately determine, how can I build a module for this system, especially if it's kind of repetitive work on a daily basis. From there, something like creating a flow chart, especially if you're like, okay, wow, I broke up my days in these kind of 15-minute increments or 1-hour increments. I've tracked my time for the last week, and I realized that there's these kind of buckets of activities, and they maybe even relate to each other. There's a bit of a process here. I think flow charting that out is a great step. And then from there, you can determine, well, is there a system that can either be added on to what we're already using, purchase, build, customize, however you're going to do that, that just that gets it out of the kind of daily routine and into a bit more of a process driven organization. I think that's one great place to start.
That's awesome. So as we come to the end, is there a question that you were wishing I would have asked you during the interview that I didn't ask you? Go ahead. That you feel like maybe we wouldn't help to round out the interview even more. Go ahead and ask the question and pose the answer.
Well, I'd love to hear from you. You know, if there is an area that you find other entrepreneurs do struggle with at the beginning or when they're building their systems, where do you find that a lot of entrepreneurs have that difficulty in kind of taking those first steps? Is it just getting it down on paper and kind of planning it out, or is it the selection of a particular system? Where do you see those challenges?
And so I think like it's usually, you know, when they see the, you know, they feel the amount of work that needs to be done, they know where they're trying to go, and then this whole paralysis of where do I start? Right. And not knowing what is the very next thing to do. And so some of them just, you know, have this like overwhelm, and that's kind of like how to get over that overwhelm and know that, you know, you don't have to solve the entire problem at once. You just have to take that first step,
right,
and build upon that. You know, it's the mindset thing, literally.
There's the old saying of, you know, how do you eat an elephant? Like one bite at a time, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, I can definitely sense that as well, that sometimes projects just are huge and, you know, determining where you start. And it could be starting with a vision of where you want to end up and then taking, you know, steps there, or just take some action, right, that moves in the right direction. Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. And so what is the best way for the listener to connect with you? And thank you for doing the interview.
The best way would be, you're welcome to email david@voices.com. That goes right to me, of course, or Twitter as well. David Cicerelli, is the handle there. So certainly would love to kind of reply and chat with you there. But if there's an opportunity, where you are creating a video or a podcast of your own, to promote your own business or product, then we'd love to provide the voiceover for that video or other kind of creative production. So I'd encourage you to check out voices.com, the website, and see if there's an opportunity for us to work together.
So now I'm speaking to you, the listener who's been listening all the way to this point. So I want to first of all thank you for listening to the interview so far. And if you've enjoyed it, I want you to do us a favor and go leave your honest review, hopefully a 5-star review on iTunes. And to do that, go to sweetprocess.com/iTunes. The reason for leaving a review is the more reviews you get, the more exposure we get, and the more listeners we get. And hey, the more encouraged we are to go out there to get guests like David to come on the show and, you know, take you behind the scenes to see how their business is systematized and what steps they took to make that happen. And, you know, finally, if you are at that stage in your business where you are tired of being a bottleneck and you want to get everything out of your head so your employees know what you know and can get work done predictably, and also on top of that, you want to be able to track that they're getting the work done, well, sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. David, thanks for doing the interview.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
And we're done.
All right.
Before you go, we want to leave you with a free gift. Get your free systemization checklist. Avoid wasting valuable time documenting procedures for the wrong tasks. Get it right the first time with the systemization checklist. Download the checklist by going to sweetprocess.com/checklist.